Welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. My name's James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our three publications, Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing, and Global Government Venturing. It's a great pleasure to be joined again by Thierry Hellis. Thierry.
Hello, Jim.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, so thanks, Thierry, for joining us. And it's back into the proper start of the 2018. So what's been exciting news over the past week?
We have quite a few big deals, actually. We have Ping An Insurance, which is a bit on a roll. At the end of November, the insurance provider was gearing up for a $1 billion IPO of Ping An Good Doctor. And now it's raised nearly $1 billion for its medical data collection and analysis subsidiary, Ping An Healthcare Management, at a whopping $8.8 billion valuation. The investment apparently comes ahead of an expected listing on the public markets and was co-led by SoftBank's Vision Fund and SBI Holdings.
Yeah, interesting deal. We're delighted that sort of Jonathan Larson, who's the sort of overall head of the Ping An Global Voyager Fund, their corporate venturing unit, his sort of COO, Donald, and Emma join us next week at our GCVI Summit, Global Corporate Venturing and Innovation Summit in California, Monterey, next week. So it'd be great to hear a bit more. But I remember Jonathan Larson was saying just a couple of weeks ago that although they're really in the fintech space with being a big insurer provider, actually they felt that healthcare was an even bigger opportunity in many ways, particularly in China, given the sort of demographics of the population. So interesting to see that that's being borne out in the valuations currently.
Yeah, definitely. Well, staying in China, we have Tencent, which continues to go from strength to strength in its corporate venturing activities and is set to lead a $1 billion round for Kuaishou, a photo and video sharing app that's now become one of the key players in China's live streaming sector. The round will reportedly value the company at $18 billion, up from a reported $3 billion less than a year ago, and will follow a $350 million round led by Tencent in March 2017.
Yeah, I mean, Tencent's just a real sort of monster when it comes to corporate venturing. And, when they were back in Kuaishou a year or so ago, it was like, wow, that's a big valuation for a young company. But effectively, to be adding $15 billion value to a company, it's just phenomenal. I mean, it's hard to imagine even very large established public companies adding $15 billion just on the fly in a 12-month experience. But Tencent probably itself is one of those. It's doubled its valuation to more than $500 billion over the past year or so. So probably to them, this is a rounding error.
We're staying with big billion-dollar rounds in China. Mobike, the famous bike-sharing company, has raised $1 billion in its latest funding round, according to press reports. The round hasn't been confirmed yet, and none of the investors were named, however, but if it's true, it would follow a failed merger between Mobike and its rival Ofo, and prove that Mobike remains a valuable proposition to investors despite burning through a lot of cash when in its competition with Ofo. In November, Qualcomm was reported to have invested an undisclosed sum in Mobike, so it's possible that was part of this new round, which would follow a $600 million round in June 2017, led by, who else? Tencent.
Yeah, I mean, there's, everyone's anticipating a lot of merger and activity in terms of the ride sharing for cars, with Didi Chuxing and Uber battling out with Lyft also there, but the sort of bike sharing is perhaps even more prevalent in China, given the sort of focus on lack of car ownership in many ways still there. So yeah, interesting to see. I think there'll be some twists and turns to happen in that sector over this year.
Yeah. Another company that's growing at a rapid pace is Capterra, the creator of an end-to-end construction services business, not a sector that we come across that much. It was only founded around 3 years ago, but has just raised $865 million in a Series D round led by SoftBank's Vision Fund, that valued it at a little over $3 billion. Capterra was valued at $1 billion when it closed a $130 million Series C round backed by Foxconn last March. Again, quite an impressive increase there, if not $15 billion.
Exactly, but construction services, it's the sector ripe for disruption, in terms of the materials they use, as well as the sort of the way that they use the sort of technology to develop the buildings, and then sort of obviously the facilities management and how they use technology to make things more energy and efficient in terms of customer use. So the fact that Capterra seems to be one of the winners in this sector is only, I think, going to draw attention to what is probably an underdeveloped market.
Yeah. Then we have Oryx, which has provided $60 million of a $70 million extension to peer-to-peer lending platform Dianrong's Series D round, which has now been increased to $290 million. Industrial equipment leasing services CMIG Leasing and Bohai Leasing are among Dianrong's existing investors, and the round follows a $207 million Series C in 2015.
Yeah, the whole peer-to-peer or democratisation of sort of finance is, you know, continuing to a phenomenal pace. We've seen obviously ICOs, initial coin offerings, and other operations effectively sort of complement the equity space, but the peer-to-peer lending is a phenomenon, and sort of Dianrong's obviously increasing its capital.
Yeah, doing something right. Snowflake Computing, a cloud data storage technology developer, has raised $263 million in Series E funding at a pre-money valuation of $1.5 billion. Capital One Growth Ventures, which previously backed a $105 million Series D round in September 2017, returned for the round, co-led by Sequoia, Iconic Capital, and Altimeter Capital. If that seems like a lot of money to raise so quickly after a big Series D, it is. And the company actually still has most of the $105 million in its bank account, according to CEO Bob Mulya. But both new and existing investors were very keen to put in more cash as they expect an IPO within a year.
Yeah, in some ways it seems counterintuitive, isn't it? You raise a big round, you know, you have the money in the bank, you're planning an IPO, so raise more money now, which then requires, you know, paying off it effectively through an IPO. It does seem slightly counterintuitive, so whether they get the IPO through in a year, I'll be surprised. But anyway, we shall see. But I think what's really interesting is the sort of the investors for Snowflake. Capital One, sort of Jaidev Sherger, I've got a pleasure of, I think, interviewing next week, actually, on stage at the CGI, GCVI sort of conference. So it'd be nice to catch up with him. But I've been really impressed by the operation he's been building over the past 3 years as a CVC there. And obviously Iconics, the sort of, in effect, the family office for Mark Zuckerberg over at Facebook. So they've got a lot of capital behind them and do some interesting deals. So interesting to see.
Yeah. Then we have Maxi Mobility, the on-demand ride provider that oversees Cabify and Easy Taxi in Iberia and Latin America, has raised $160 million in a Rakuten Ventures-backed round that values it at $1.4 billion. The funding will help it compete against not only Uber, but 99, the Brazil-based platform acquired by Didi Huijing a few weeks ago. But as round sizes and valuations continue to rise in the sector, you have to wonder how long this can go on, considering profits for the companies themselves rather than their investors seem so hard to come by.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think spot on there, Thierry. I think the fact that Infect SoftBank stroke Didi Huijing, you know, bought out 99 at the 1 billion valuation, you know, creates a lot of opportunity for Maxi to raise money at a good valuation itself. But at some point, the combination between Uber, 99 and Cabify, something's got to give. And whether that's an M&A or merger or, you know, sort of someone falling by the wayside, you know, something's going to give, you feel, in this space.
Ring, meanwhile, the maker of a smart doorbell video system, is raising $160 million at a valuation of nearly $1 billion, according to a securities filing. The company most recently closed a $109 million debt and equity round a year ago, with backers including mobile semiconductor producer Qualcomm, insurance firm American Family, and real estate company J.F. Scheer, and other prominent investors such as Richard Branson. American Family Insurance, Scheer Ventures, and Richard Branson had already co-led a $28 million Series B in 2015 before adding $61.2 million in a Series C round in March 2016, also featuring Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers.
Yeah, interesting this, actually. I mean, there was a lot of interest a couple of years ago when Google acquired Nest on what was happening to the sort of smart home, and Ring's one of the sort of next generation. Qualcomm, Quinn Lee is actually co-chair of our GCVI summit. Feels like I'm going to mention a lot on this podcast, but given that we've got 600 plus attendees and it's about $4.5 trillion of aggregate annual revenue from the corporations attended, everyone's there. So everyone we talk about on this podcast will effectively be at the conference next week. So I have plenty of opportunities, I must say, for doing that. So it's delighted that Quinn's co-chair, and with Sue Siegel, Chief Innovation Officer and CEO of GE Ventures, for the summit next week. But, you know, Ring, we saw a lot of interest when Google acquired Nest a couple of years ago, billion plus valuation. It was like, oh, what's happening? It seemed to have gone quiet. certainly sort of there hasn't been a lot of news out of Nest given sort of Tony Fadell's departure. Yeah, but Ring has obviously been quietly going about its business, and you know, I think there's still a lot of promise on this. If you look at the hype cycle, then this area is probably due for a re-evaluation.
Yeah. I mean, as far as technology goes, having seen what Ring does, that's probably one of the few things where I, as a consumer, would think that's something that I might buy. A lot of the stuff is, I don't know. I don't think I'm an early technology adopter, but yeah, Ring does look quite cool.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't, funnily enough, you mentioned that. It's one of the quirks of the jobs, actually. I'm probably as Luddite as it comes in terms of my own personal use of technology. So I've not actually seen how Ring's product works compared to peers or why it's an advantage. But you know, I always get a bit cautious in terms of what these companies could do with the data and the hacking. But if they can get around those issues, then I'm sure the early adopters such as yourself, Thierry, are just the start of a big wave.
Meanwhile, we have Canada Pension Plan Investment Board, which has paid $144 million for a 6.3% stake in Indian renewable energy developer Renew Power, valuing it at almost $2.3 billion. The deal represents a nice profit for the African Development Bank, which sold the shares to the pension board, but is also a good sign for JERA, the joint venture formed by Tokyo Electric Power and Chubu Electric Power, which invested $200 million in Renew a year ago at a $2 billion valuation.
Yeah, I mean, it's as hot an area as you can get in some ways, literally, actually, giving you solar and renewable power. But interesting to see that we're really starting to see that flow through of, you know, of sort of capital forming and big valuations for, you know, people in this space. So, funny enough, our sort of London conference in May, I will start to plug that, the Global Corporate Venture Symposium, and including the Global University Venture Infusion element, so it's a combination of corporates and universities in May in London. You know, the theme of that is going beyond capital and looking at risk, return and impact. This sort of space and these sorts of deals are perfectly explain why there's such an interest in those types of topics.
Well, speaking of corporate and university worlds colliding, immunotherapy developer Team Unity Therapeutics, a spin-out from University of Pennsylvania, has closed a $100 million Series A round that added Gilead Sciences, Ping An Ventures, and Be The Match Biotherapies to existing backers, including Lilly Asia Ventures, as well as Penn itself. The company is working on treatments for cancer, infectious diseases, and autoimmune diseases that will function by activating the body's T cells, and raised $10 million in a Lilly Asia Ventures and Penn-backed round 2 years ago.
Yeah, Judith Lee, the Lilly Asia Ventures partner who backed that Team Unity all those years ago, just joined the board, I think, of Team Unity. And she was a GCV rising stars for the past couple of years and probably will be again this year, actually. Plug ahead of next week's invite-only dinner. So, no, she's really been on the tear in terms of and the group itself, in terms of backing some of these deals. And there's been no hotter area than immunotherapy and cancer.
Then we have Stem, a producer of scalable energy storage system, which has raised $80 million from Activate Capital, Temasek, the Singapore state-owned investment firm, and another Canadian pension investor, Ontario's Teachers Pension Plan, for the first close of a Series D round. Stem has now raised more than $190 million in debt and equity altogether from investors including GE Ventures, Total Energy Ventures, Iberdrola, Mitsui, Constellation Technology Ventures, and RWE Supply and Trading.
Interesting. We're certainly going to see a lot more of this crossover as rounds get bigger and valuations get bigger of some of the government funds, whether it's Temasek or the Canadian state-owned pension schemes, as well as obviously a lot in the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, really focusing in on some of these technologies and backing in. I think, you know, it's only going to increase the sort of the interest in terms of private valuations. We've really hit a tipping point. You know, SoftBank, obviously, with its $100 billion fundraise, which more than half came from governments, is perfect example of this next stage. Funnily enough, what I'll be talking about next week, Thierry, my good talk about the move from village to city venture capital, as I'm terming it.
Looking forward to that.
Thanks. It will be very short, so even if you're not looking forward to it, it will be brief.
Speaking of Constellation Technology Ventures, it has also participated in a $75 million round for Precision Hawk, the developer of a drone control system for enterprises. Third Point Ventures led that round, which also featured Yamaha Motor, Comcast Ventures, Intel Capital, Syngenta Ventures, DuPont Ventures, Verizon Ventures, NTT Docomo Ventures, and an unnamed USAA subsidiary, as well as Innovate Indiana Fund, the seed investment vehicle of Indiana University that previously also backed a $10 million Series B and $18 million Series C round.
Well, I think that's really interesting. I mean, great area, obviously, but the fact what I'm really liking is some of these university venturing funds, such as the Innovate Indiana, are able to follow on. They're not just doing the early stage and then letting the returns really be reaped by the later stage investors, that they're really following on. I think it shows a sophistication as well as obviously resources to do that. Yeah, but then the syndicate is fascinating. Funny enough, they're all attending pretty well much, I think, our conference next week, so we can ask them about that, Thierry. But that real sort of coming together of sophisticated, large-scale syndicates who can really help a portfolio company. It's really next-gen stuff. Well, that's a good set of deals over the past week. It feels like we're back post-Christmas and New Year into some really exciting activity. What's happening on funds, though?
Well, we have cybersecurity software provider and internet company Kihoo 360, which has formed a $156 million venture fund in partnership with Beijing Cultural Center Fund that will invest in internet and media-focused companies. Kihoo 360 has made a few VC investments in the past, but nothing like China's largest CVC participants, and it will be interesting to see how far its scope goes, considering much of its past deals have been for app and app-focused portfolio companies.
Yeah, I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, you know, people were talking about the bats, Baidu, Alibaba and Tencent and what they were doing. But in the same breath, they were also talking about people like Xiaomi and Kihoo 360. Kihoo 360 has been one of those that's kind of been around, done some interesting deals, but not really scaled up their venturing program in the same way that we've seen the others, certainly not that we've seen publicly at least. So interesting that they started to really expand out again.
Yeah. Then we have ING, the Dutch financial services firm, which has set its sights on sustainable businesses and launched a $123 million fund specifically aimed at startups developing products and services with a positive environmental impact. The fund, called Sustainable Investments, will initially focus on the Netherlands, Luxembourg and Belgium, but will expand to other countries in future.
Yeah, Benelux seems a nice place to start with this sort of area and these types of focus. And good to see ING doing this. Obviously, they've set up or renamed ING Ventures to do some other deals as well. But the fact that they've got a specific fund on impact is so the world turning.
Then we have Orange, Edenred and JC Deco, meanwhile, are recognising Africa as the next big market and have put their weight behind the $70 million first close of a $123 million fund that is being raised by Partech Ventures. Dubbed Partech Africa, the sector-agnostic fund will operate out of new regional headquarters in Dakar and invest in startups across the continent. Commitments from IFC, European Investment Bank, and Averroes Finance 3, a fund of funds backed by BPI France and Proparco, mean the corporates are in the company of several experienced public investors in Africa as well.
Yeah, no, Africa's a big area that we're looking at for the symposium this year. We were delighted when CEO Pamindavar of the Tony Elamu Foundation spoke last year and really sort of opened eyes and attention. Actually, it's interesting that the French community is really sort of stepping up their focus. Orange with their digital ventures got a fund. Obviously, we've got this Partech Africa. There's a big focus from some of the sort of BPI and Proparco. And, you know, so it's interesting that it seems to be much more Franco-led initiatives and Anglo-Franco in this space.
I guess historically, French colonialism means there are a lot of ties between France and mostly Northern Africa. But yeah, there's a lot of ties still, I imagine.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, China obviously is the sort of the big heavyweight in the continent, over the past sort of decade or more. But the fact that sort of the French are trying to re-establish sort of ties and do more in terms of the venture space. I haven't seen so much from the sort of Anglo-Americans there. I mean, some of the firms have sort of dabbled, but not to the same degree. I think it's a missed opportunity from my point of view. I think if you look at the demographics, there's obviously going to be some really interesting stuff happening there over the next 5 to 10 years. So getting in and doing it now makes absolute sense. And I can't understand why we're not seeing more of the Anglo-Americans doing it to complement the French.
Maybe we will, fingers crossed. On the university side, we have University of Tokyo Edge Capital, the venture capital affiliate of University of Tokyo, which has raised an initial $143 million of a $229 million spin-out focused investment fund. The capital has been provided by unnamed domestic financial services firms. UTech expects to reach the final close by April and hopes to attract contributions from foreign investors. The fund will back early through to late stage companies providing up to $9.2 million per portfolio business, focusing on sectors such as automated driving, AI, and healthcare. The firm will also team up with National University of Singapore and unnamed US-based VC firms to offer investees the chance to expand overseas.
Yeah, no, really interesting deal. I think this is UTech's fourth fund or something like that. In terms of spin-out, third or fourth fund. But interesting. I think they'll probably close at $200 million at their hard cap in the next couple of months. So congrats to them. But funny enough, I gave a talk last week. The government very kindly invited me over to talk about university venture, and they've had this big billion-plus initiative to support venture out of the four main universities there. But really interesting scene and sector. I've got to say, I was really taken aback by their approach and what they're trying to do. Sort of UTech has been around obviously 10 plus years and had a great track record, but then the sort of government support and the sort of complementary fund of funds to support University of Tokyo system, and then there's some private initiatives over at Keio, which is a private university, and then the other three main national incorporated universities, Tohoku, Kyoto and Osaka, are really developing it. Yeah, not all of them will do well. I mean, some will require some iteration, but in terms of starting to do something, they're really setting the bar high, I think.
It's definitely an interesting country, and something that, you know, I'm keen to track as well. So, yeah.
Well, I've got to write up on the plane over to the US my notes from that trip, actually. So we'll
Fantastic.
Be preparing a little bit of a feature on that frontier. So should work for Gov. But anyone got any thoughts or insights, then don't hesitate to let me know, because I am just starting to write it up.
Awesome. I look forward to reading that.
Cool. Right. Well, good set of funds. Anything on the exits? What's happening on terms of the money back to those funds?
Well, we have quite a varied array of exits. We have Figs, a US-based medical apparel producer backed by footwear brand Crocs, which has raised $65 million from diversified holding company Tolco, and will use the capital to buy out existing investors, making Tolco the only external backer. Crocs, which operates a Figs concession in its flagship New York store, took part in Figs' $2 million seed round in 2013, alongside more Davidoff Ventures, 500 startups, Carlin Ventures, and a range of additional unnamed backers. Figs then secured $5 million in a mid-2016 Series A round led by Campfire Capital and backed by Endeavor Catalyst. Its early investors also included JH Partners, Irving Place Capital, Raptor Ventures, Riverwood Capital, and Suffolk Equity Partners.
Yeah, I mean, certainly given the sort of carnage happening in terms of retail, trying to add value and show what you can do by moving into added value services like medical, how well makes sense to explore. So corporate venture at its finest. Good on Crocs.
Yeah. And then we have digital media company Gree, which has exited Indonesia-based property listings portal Urban Indo in an acquisition of undisclosed size by real estate portal 99.co. Urban Indo received an undisclosed amount of seed funding from VC firm East Ventures in 2012. Before adding an undisclosed amount in a 2013 Series A round led by Gree's corporate venturing unit, Gree Ventures. IMJ Fenix, a joint venture between VC firm Fenix Venture Capital and digital marketing agency IMG Corporation, also took part in the Series A round. Obviously, since then, professional services firm Accenture acquired a majority stake in IMG.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it? I mean, funnily enough, I mentioned Keio in terms of the university venturing, and they've set up their innovation fund. But the person running it, CEO, was one of the co-founders of Gree, and they did 100-plus deals through Gree Ventures, primarily Southeast Asia. And this was obviously one of those that did a great way. But I think that level of experience and how to sort of manage and create a function will be hugely useful for Keio. Personally, the fact that they've got someone so experienced to do it. So nice deal, nice exit, but the follow-on implications as the experience comes through in terms of other areas, I think, will be one to track in terms of the hidden wiring.
One exit that isn't so nice was Primary Data, a US-based data virtualization software producer backed by computer technology provider Dell, which is shutting down after failing to attract enough clients. Primary Data created a platform called Datasphere that facilitated automated enterprise data management across the cloud and on-site infrastructure, basically using machine learning to organize data without manual intervention or the disruption of applications. Dell's corporate venturing arm, Dell Technologies Capital, lists Primary Data as a portfolio company, but has not revealed details of when or how much it has invested. Primary Data has disclosed $100 million in equity funding.
Yeah, no, so obviously big back in, and they had Steve Wozniak, or the Woz, who was co-founder of Apple as chief scientific officer. So, you know, good pedigree, you know, good back in, good backers. Just hasn't worked out. You know, these things happen.
Yeah. Then, happier news, Home24, a Germany-based online home and living product retailer backed by e-commerce holding group Rocket Internet, is gearing up for an IPO. The company is hoping to list in early summer 2018, according to unnamed sources that have spoken to a German magazine called Manager Magazine, though the reports have not yet been confirmed by Home24. The business made a loss of $25 million on a turnover of 195 million euros in the first 9 months of last year, but expects to balance its books ahead of the initial public offering. Rocket Internet currently owns a 43% stake in Home24, having most recently contributed to a $22.3 million round in September 2016 with investment firm Baillie Gifford.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it gets away. It'd be another tick for Rocket Internet, which has obviously had a fair few of these IPOs, including of itself.
Entertainment company Modern Times Group, or MTG, secured an exit from France-based media group Trace as TPG Growth, part of private equity group TPG, acquired a majority stake. Evolution Media backed the acquisition deal, as did private equity firm Satya Capital. Trace's co-founders and management will own the business's remaining equity following the deal, financial terms of which remain undisclosed. MTG acquired a 75% share in Trace in 2014 from growth capital management firm Next Stage, investment firm Entrepreneur Venture, impact investment firm Citizen Capital, and a company management in a deal that valued Trace at $54.4 million.
Interesting, you know, complex deal. We'll be, you know, not being privy to the private financials. Hard to know who made the returns out of this, or, you know, who's lost out, but someone probably has along the way. Great. So, well, that's good exits. So thank you very much. Anything on the people?
Yes, we have a few on the university side. There's US-based spin-out-focused investment firm Osage University Partners, which has promoted 4 members across its finance and investment teams, starting with Claudia Dennis, previously VP of Finance, who will now act as Chief Financial Officer for both OUP and its sister fund, Osage Venture Partners. Beth Grafstrom, former fund controller, has been promoted to VP of Finance. Stephanie Stamen, formerly a Senior Associate, has been promoted to the position of Principal. And Associate David Dorsey has been promoted to Senior Associate.
Congrats to all. Osage, obviously, you've been on a good run in terms of some of the investments, so it makes sense to promote other people.
Yeah. And then we also have Texas A&M University, which has appointed Mark Bartow, current director of University of Michigan's Energy Institute, as vice president of research. Bartow was named after a 7-month recruitment process and will take charge of Texas A&M's division of research beginning on February 15th.
Yeah, no, we had a great conference down in sort of Texas, Houston last year, particular focus on the sort of the energy sector, but pulling together some of the corporates, hoping to do more this year, this fall, particularly around the sort of university and corporate space, linking up with some partners down there. But yeah, congrats to Mark. Well, thanks very much for that, Thierry. Interesting roundup. We're glad to see you when we'll be on the plane together on Monday, flying over to California. So it would be nice that we'll probably get a bit more time to speak then, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Cool. Well, you have a nice weekend. Thanks all. Speak soon.
And that is it for this week's edition of the Global Venturing Review podcast. As Jim has already mentioned there, both of us will be in California next week for our GCVI summit. So there won't be an episode on February 5th, but we will be back to our usual schedule on February 12th. Until then, if you have any feedback, feel free to email me at thelis@mawsonia.com. That's thelis@mawsonia.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, comment on SoundCloud, recommend us to your friends and colleagues. It is always very much appreciated. And thank you to all of those that have already done so. I wish you a productive week, or indeed a productive fortnight, and we will speak to you again in February. Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.